Good afternoon, and I'd like to welcome you to the Health Commission meeting for March 8th, 2021. And just before we start, I'd like to do a little house cleaning. Just realize that if with the members, if you have a question and you're on video, which it looks like everybody is, please raise your hand to indicate that you would like to speak and wait for the chairperson to call on you. For anyone in the public that's listening to the meeting, if you want to provide public comment, please go to this email address, mcoughlin@co.slo.ca.us, and you can leave your public comment. Any comments left during the meeting, we will attempt to read them in person. If not, we will provide them as addendums to the agenda on the website. If you're looking to receive any agendas or minutes of the meetings, please simply Google San Luis Obispo Health Commission, and there'll be a link on that website to view minutes or actually view past meetings also. With that, I will turn the chair over to our chairperson, Mary Jean Sage.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you all for coming to be with us this evening. We'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. Our first agenda item, of course, is public comment, when we will invite persons desiring to speak on issues other than anything that we have scheduled this evening, but that are within the scope of the interest of the Health Commission. Have we had any public comments submitted, Mike?
There is no public comment.
Okay. Well, we'll move right on to the consent agenda then. Only one consent item this evening, and that's the approval of the minutes of our last meeting. If you've all had a chance to read them, I will entertain a motion to approve the consent item. Lynn moves.
For a second.
I see a second from Candace. Thank you. All those in favor of the consent agenda, please just raise your hand. Okay. All right. Before we have our public health report, are there any topics from our previous meetings that anybody has anything to report on? Our last meeting, we had Jen Miller with us. She talked about the vaccine task force and what we were doing for distribution. I have been trying to send on to you all the weekly messaging items that we've talked about. So hopefully you have gotten them, and hopefully they've been helpful for some of you. I know, and I do appreciate the help that you all are giving us in getting them out to the public. The last one, I didn't get out to you until this morning, but we did, and Dr. Rosen, I'm sure we'll have more to talk about this, but we did receive some of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine last week. We actually distributed a little of that to the local pharmacies, I understand, but we are, I think, getting more vaccine in each week as we speak. We still have lots of people to vaccinate, though. So with that, Lynn, go ahead. Yep, unmute.
I just want to say that I've worked a couple of shifts at Cuesta, and that every single person I've encountered has been complimentary about how well organized we are, and they're surprised. So the only negative stuff I've had is from outside of that area, people having trouble getting appointments. So, and they've been asking me about how the lottery actually works. So maybe Dr. Rosen is going to fill us in on that with his report. But otherwise, yeah, and everybody appears happy, and it's just a big relief, I think, for the people coming to get their vaccinations. They've been very pleased.
Good. That's good to hear. And I've actually been hearing the same thing about how well all three of the clinics are organized and being run, and nobody has to wait a long time. The people are all very pleasant. I, too, have certainly heard, as I'm sure we all have, there are people out in the community who are still waiting to get their first vaccine, me being one of them, actually, but I'm signed up for the lottery, so we'll see how it works. All right, with that, I will turn it over to Candace, go ahead.
Sorry, I just wanted to pipe in. This is not vaccine related, but I was supposed to be organizing the speakers for this meeting. We were going to talk about the blue bag program, and Gillespie was going to come, but she's unable to come and speak to us because she's working at, okay, it is related to the vaccines. She's working as at the sites. So she can't come until probably summer is what she thinks. But I just wanted to update you, and I'd like to keep it on the agenda at some point, because I think the alternatives to encampments subcommittee of the encampments committee of HSOC is proposing a 10-year plan to the Board of Supervisors, where they're planning to expand that blue bag program to 10 different encampments. So it's on like a future agenda for the Board of Supervisors, hopefully too, and maybe we'll get some more people on board. So to be continued, I guess. I'm so sorry that I couldn't find a backup for that.
That's absolutely understandable. And we thank her for doing what she's doing right now at one of the sites. So yes, I think we can, you know, keep it on for a prospective future item. If you think it would be helpful for us to try and do it before they go to the Board of Supervisors, maybe you can just keep a little bit of an eye on that, Candace, and see if it would be more appropriate for us to have her before that, if she can come. Okay? Good. Okay, Dr. Rosen, it's all yours.
Oh, boy. Okay. So I have a couple of non-COVID-19 items to discuss for a change, which is kind of exciting. And these are more sort of issues to be aware of, I suppose. The first is that this past week, CDPH issued an announcement related to an Ebola outbreak that started on or was identified on February 7th in both Guinea and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Travelers from those areas are being routed to just 6 airports within the United States. One of those airports is LAX. So we're just, you know, we're sort of aware, essentially, and recently put out an advisory to providers in the area to inquire about international travel history, and particularly travel to those areas if there are symptoms of Ebola. That's one item. The second item is that today the state provided guidance that all transfers from acute rehabilitation facilities should be screened for Candida auris, because the prevalence of Candida auris has increased significantly, another relatively new on the radar multi-drug resistant organism that again is on the rise. So we expect to put out a provider advisory related to that tomorrow. In other news, so back to COVID-19, I would say the most notable, and you all brought up vaccines, and I can touch on that as well, but there's been a lot of guidance that's come out from both the state and the CDC late last week and early part of this week. Probably the most movement and action has been around youth sports. So essentially, youth sports is now open, as long as essentially all forms of sport, as long as schools in particular, but groups participating in youth sports follow the same guidance that applies to colleges and universities for sports. But the main thrust is that sports are encouraged outside, and for programs that are wanting to pursue indoor sports, then they should would be required to test on at least a weekly basis all of their participants, and that they have their own internal planning, as well as how they would manage contact tracing internally. So that's been a significant development. As a result of that, there's been quite a bit of interest in testing amongst high schools in particular, related to the movement around youth sports. In addition, along those lines, with our move into the red tier, which was a major accomplishment as a county, that has also helped, that helped to open up youth sports last week. And that officially sort of got the green light the last weekend in February. In other areas, there was guidance issued today by the CDC related to individuals who are fully vaccinated. So that for the first time today, they said that, you know, folks who are, if you have a group entirely comprised of individuals who are fully vaccinated, they can hang out indoors without a mask on. And they also gave their blessing to hugging, which is good. So that is something that I think is noteworthy and encouraging. Their guidance came out from the state today related to long-term care visitation, and with 10 minutes of that guidance coming out, we were receiving calls related to that. Noteworthy there is that even in the setting of an outbreak, visitation is permitted as long as the visitor is in PPE. For counties in the purple tier, testing is required prior to visitation, but since that does not apply to our county, there's no requirement for testing prior to visitation at a long-term care setting. In addition, the CDC also put out a gathering guidance today. That was not particularly noteworthy, but it is significant, I think, in that the state is likely to follow with its own gathering guidance shortly. In terms of how we are doing with respect to just disease activity in terms of COVID-19, our numbers are way down. Today, this afternoon, we had 24 confirmed cases reported. In congregate settings, our activity is significantly down, and that's attributable primarily to vaccination, which has gone very well, and long-term care settings, both amongst residents and staff, for the most part. And currently, we have just 3 outbreaks that we're following, and 2 of those are in smaller, I guess, I would describe as non-traditional long-term care settings. So one is community housing, and another is the other is in a smaller residential care for the elderly facility, and that actually just cleared about 10 minutes ago. So really good news on that front. In terms of vaccines, so this week we are lined up to deliver 12,900 vaccines, which would be a new record for us. In addition, we're going to start farm worker Fridays on March 19th, which involves the first of those events will happen in Arroyo Grande, and the idea is to vaccinate agricultural workers. Last week opened up vaccination to educators, both K through 12 and higher education, and the target there is I guess that has since changed, so I'll talk a little bit more about that. So the question of the lottery system came up. So that is I think an interesting question that is less relevant this week because we ended up having open appointments this week. We did not have nearly the numbers that we expected from the 65 years and up age group. So we ended up with thousands of open appointments. Yes, Mary Jean.
How is that? Because I tried and it said the appointments are all full.
Oh.
And I'm almost 75.
Yeah. Did you try today? Was that today?
I didn't try today, no.
So it happened. So this started on Friday afternoon. If you try today, it should be very easy for you to get an appointment.
Okay.
So as a result of that, we allowed for even more appointments to be filled by educators. But there, even with that, there's still unfilled appointments.
Okay.
That's in contrast to what we had been experiencing up until then, which was within 10 minutes, all the slots were being filled as soon as we would release them. So
weren't they supposed to draw from the lottery when they had open appointments?
Well, so the lottery... Yeah, so effectively, these two things sort of happened concurrently. So the fact that we have unfilled appointments, at least for the moment, makes the lottery sort of moot. Now, that likely will change as we open it up further, but we'll have to, and when I say that, meaning this, as of March 15th, vaccinations will be open to those with pre-existing medical conditions that predispose them to more severe COVID-19. That is coming up. In addition, as of March 15th, individuals living in homeless shelters and other congregate settings that don't necessarily fall under long-term care will also be eligible for vaccination. So that will increase the numbers. In addition, this week, the state is going to issue clarification on who fits under the emergency services category. Who would be eligible for vaccination now, as well as who fits under the child care and education category, which would kick in as soon as they issue that. There's a lot of change, and it's definitely a challenge to try to keep up with. So I would say book it while you can, Mary Jean.
Yeah, so I'll go to the computer right now.
Right. So that, yes, we did receive some, Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And Unfortunately, I am involved mostly in the response, so I don't know exactly how much Johnson & Johnson was passed on to pharmacies, how much will be dedicated to the Farmworker Fridays event, etc. But it is in play, and it is enabling us to target a much bigger number in terms of immunizations that we will administer. So that's all that I have. Any questions?
Sure.
Yeah.
Lynn, go ahead.
The question that I keep getting asked is, how exactly does the lottery work? So I go in and I sign up, say, and along with another 500 people or something. How are the appointments assigned? And if there's not enough to give me an appointment this week, how is it? Do I have a priority into the next week? That kind of thing.
So yes, the answer to that question is yes. The idea it was that to essentially up until the lottery was put into place, it was just based on when you tried to make your appointment. So all the appointments were getting filled within 10 minutes. It just is coincidental that when we enact the lottery, we also have this glut of appointments. And I think that's likely to fluctuate, right? But in answer to your question, yes. So if you sign up this week, don't get an appointment this week, which isn't the case because we have more appointments than people. But if it were the case, then you would receive priority for the following week.
So does somebody call the people?
Yeah, I believe it's either email or text.
Oh, that's right, because you have to choose how you want to be notified.
Is it a one-time sign-up then for people who have already signed up for the lottery, just so that in case there's anybody watching and wants to know, they can clarify that? Is it just a one-time sign-up for the lottery?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
So the other question that I got were that, sometimes there's people like in Cambria get assigned to a Rio Grande, and elderly people who have a hard enough time getting as far as Paso Robles or downtown Cambria. So is there any consideration on area? I don't know how it looks now where you sign up.
So that I'm actually not. So I know you can indicate a preference in terms of date and in terms of morning or afternoon. That's where most of the conversation was. To be honest, I'm not sure about location, but
you can select location. You can select location and preferred time, morning, afternoon, and the more you select, the more chance you have getting an appointment. And so it is a matter of, I think, partly what you select.
Okay. That's what I'll say. Somebody asked me.
Yeah, but I think the take home message is sign up now. This week is a good week to sign up to try to get vaccinated for the 65 and over age group.
So, Gene, as vice chair, I'm going to ask you to take over the meeting. I'm going to try right now and see if I can get on.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Excellent. Any other questions? Yes, Candace.
Of course. First, I have just a couple of little questions. The Candida auris, I'm not familiar with that. Does it cause pneumonia or a skin thing or what?
Yeah, so it's a skin contaminant, but it can cause sepsis and pneumonia. Yeah.
Okay. I haven't had time to read the new CDC guidelines about what you can do after you're vaccinated, so I'm excited to do that. But did they say anything specifically about kids, like gathering with kids that are not vaccinated, since it's going to be a while? And a lot of the folks that are fully vaccinated are going to be grandparents, right? So
yes. So what they did say is that what is permitted is for people who are fully vaccinated to gather indoors with individuals from one household who are not vaccinated, but not beyond one household, unmasked. So if you have more than, if you have two sets of kids who aren't vaccinated, right, because they're kids, then you would need to wear a mask.
And they didn't have anything in there about, like, I don't know, testing recommendations for the kids or anything like that?
No. So they did, there was very limited language around testing. So the idea being that if you're fully vaccinated and you're exposed, you don't need to get tested. The only, the exception to that is if you're living in a congregate, if you're living or working in a congregate care setting, then you still need to participate in response testing.
Finally, beyond last that. Question, I think. Mm-hmm. So sorry, I think my internet is weird, always. For the vaccination, higher education.
Yes.
Is tier one, I'm going to turn off my video. Is tier, okay. Is tier 1B fully open?
Is tier 1B fully open? So that is a tricky question. So for folks in education, we're still deferring to, for example, for K through 12, the scheduling is coming through the County Office of Education, through Dr. Brush's office. So we allocate him X number of slots, and then they're doing their own prioritization.
Okay.
So I suspect that it is the, a similar process for higher education. I just don't know exactly what that looks like or who those appointments are coming through.
I don't know exactly either, but I know it's the similar thing. Like, they have to make appointments through their human, our, for Cal Poly, it's our human resources. Mm-hmm. I wish I could share my email inbox with you because it looked like a vaccine Hunger Games. Apparently word got out that Johnson & Johnson was delivered to the pharmacies and that they would vaccinate any educator, any educator.
Right.
And so all of my colleagues were like messaging this place, that place or whatever. Is this going to be a consistent thing? Like, can people count on the pharmacies having J&J and giving it out to educators, or should... I don't know. I'm just trying to get this to my people.
Yeah, so there are four. So the short answer is yes.
Okay.
I mean, there may be sort of an up and down in terms of vaccine supply to the pharmacies as well. But there are four pharmacies receiving vaccine directly from the federal government, and those are Albertsons, CVS, Walgreens, and Rite Aid. So those are all options for trying to get vaccinated. And any of the tiers that are open, sorry, any of the groups that the state has said are eligible for vaccine can go to pharmacies to get vaccinated.
Okay. Well, a lot of my friends did today.
Perfect. Yeah. And we can't really, so we... You know, and ideally they would follow the same sub-prioritization that we're following, but it's just too much of a challenge to make that happen.
Yeah. I think it was a little confusing. for sure today.
It's going to get even more. But yes, there those appointments are available if you work in education. It's going to get even more confusing this week.
Now, some of the conferences are also full, Candace, just so you know.
Believe me, I'm getting there's appointments here. These ones are full. Like, I'm getting all of these messages, so.
And a lot of the confusion will come in related to what constitutes emergency services. So it's very broad. So we're a little worried about that. How'd it go, Mary Jean?
They want you to register for the registry, and I already did that, so.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, hopefully you'll get word.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions for Dr. Rosen? Tom, are you getting any questions from the public?
No, I think people are excited and it's gone well getting, I know Kiwanis has been basically offering volunteer rides for the North County and helping people get in. And I too thought Quest did a great job. It was great to have the jazz band playing for us as we were flying. So I think it's gone very well.
Good.
I did have one more other thing to say, which is thank you to those of you who've been working on the vaccine hesitancy issue. Much appreciated.
Are the numbers any better at some of the facilities as far as the staff getting vaccinated?
So I do think there's been a little bit. So I have had, you know, just some anecdotal sort of firsthand experience getting some additional staff vaccinated now that the third round vaccination clinics have come and gone already through the pharmacy partnership program. But I don't have a sense of, we haven't done another round of surveying since that initial survey.
So we're still showing about 30%.
Oh, for staff, it's more like, it's been closer to between 40 and 50%.
Okay, that's getting better. I know that 30% is what is being showed nationally also,
right.
But
yeah.
That's still a low percentage.
It is still low, yeah.
I think Jean has a question.
Well, actually, I just wanted to report. I'm on the board for the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, and actually, most of the skilled facilities, staff and residents are really high up there.
Yes.
It's the residential care facilities, the small mom-and-pop six-bed facilities that are the ones that are kind of lagging behind.
Yes. The skilled nursing facilities did great in terms of staff vaccination. The residents are given, but the staff vaccination rates were very high, which was great.
Good.
Like in the 90s.
Good. Thanks for being with us, Rick.
Thank you.
All right. Very hard at public health.
Okay, and I'll try to find out about your vaccine appointment.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks. All right. Do any of our commissioners have anything to report from any of their committee work? Go ahead, Jean.
Okay, met on Friday with the Adult Services Policy Council and the Slow Village Status. You know, we have a village here that is very active. Uh-huh. It's a national initiative, having, you know, support within the community. And even though with the, the pandemic, they're still making as many contacts as they did before, but just through Zoom and, you know, whatever. And the focus really has been on making sure people get vaccinated, because this is a very high-risk population. In addition to that, there was an open conversation about what's going on with vaccinations. And there were 35 people that, you know, different not-for-profits that are talking about what they see. Some of these are people with disabilities and all the rest. And really, it's like, what are we doing as far as the hard to reach population, which we talked about last time. So, you know, there was a big discussion. Is there anything that, you know, the task force has been talking about? And
we talk about it at every single meeting. And there are some groups, because we have representation from all of those outlying groups. So, for instance, on the farm worker issue, which was a big issue, his name is escaping me right now, but that head of the Farm Bureau up in Paso Robles, he has been very instrumental in getting the subgroup together to decide how to do that, and that's how they came up with the Farmer Friday that we're going to start next week, I think it is. There's a pastor on the task force, and he's, you know, working through the faith-based organization and that. So there are lots of groups, and yes, they've had, and one of the things that did come out of the task force is CHC ran a report and went through their patient base and identified thousands of patients that they individually called and helped to make arrangements to get them in. And I think we didn't have a meeting last week. We're doing every other meeting now. CHC got accepted into that second round. It was a federal program. So they're going to get some vaccine themselves, and then they'll be able to perhaps go out to some of those areas and that. We've talked about mobile clinics, but those are hard to put together, and we're not there yet to where we, you know, would do that. But if you have any, you know, any groups in particular, we can certainly check and make sure that we include them in the outreach.
I think it was the consensus of the group was, you know, to give some television type spots, because the ones that are really truly homebound watch TV, but they're not sure how to connect. So if they're homebound, and is there a national initiative? Like, we have home health that'll go out and do other things. Would they be able to make a home visit? Because some people are home bed bound, so they wouldn't be able. It's a lot harder to get them vaccinated, but they need it.
Last week, instead of the task force meeting, they had an open conversation. Unfortunately, I had to work out of town, but with Tara, who is the communication guru, I will call her, and I think they did talk about media and how they could get out to, you know, we all got a postcard, but that was a while. There have been a couple of things. I'm not a TV watcher, so I can't. I mean, I did see it once or twice, but that's about all I watch TV. So it could have been on more than that. I'm not sure. But a lot of people, I don't know if older people would do this or not, although Ken and I are certainly in that older population. We don't do newspaper and we don't do TV, but we do our iPhones. You know, and then some of those news organizations. So that might be a place to get. But I'll take your concerns to the task force. We meet this week. So.
Yeah. What was the adult services policy? That was the bottom line, saying, you know, maybe we need to do more of that, more of the media. Uh-huh. Even like, you know, you send out those wonderful updates and I pass them on and they're very appreciative of it. But then it's like, you know, we can take care of our own agencies, but then there's these people that are out there with no agency. Right. And that was, you know, everybody was concerned and they suggested media.
Okay, sure. I'm sure we could find some money someplace to.
Well, I think the public service through the TV, they
do some PSAs, public service announcements. So.
And the last thing I have to report on is I gave a report that there is a bill about AB 1234. It's in the state of California as far as post e-registry. So there's a bill looking at, you know, advanced healthcare directives and post. And it was a physician actually in Fresno that put it together and got an assemblyman to, you know, to sponsor it. But it says it's too late when people get to the emergency rooms and they don't know what people really want. You know, if we had an e-registry for Pulsed, their wishes would be respected at that point in time. So anyway, it's just, I just wanted to let you know, I made that announcement at the meeting, AB1234.
So could it use support, like a letter of support? Do you know where it is?
I mean, well, I'll just monitor it. But if I, you know, if anybody has, you know, the initiative, I am very supportive of it because, you know, it's the Coalition for Compassionate Care is the one that's really been at the knocking at the door for over 10 years. But this is one way that we can make it so that an emergency room doctor could know what people's wishes are. That's okay. A communication and ongoing and up to date, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's the last thing.
All right. Anybody? Lynn?
Jean, what specifically is the bill aiming at? I mean, is it making it mandatory? Is it, or just making it possible to have e-registration? I mean, do you need a bill for that?
Possible. I mean, other states, I think Oregon and Washington already have e-registries so that you can have a repository where everybody would have the same place to go. It's not mandatory at all. It's just saying that it's... I'll read what it says here. Under California Health and Human Services Agency, the legislation would clarify that electronic representation of the Pulsed form have the same legal standing as those paper Pulsed and would allow electronic signatures on the Pulsed and advanced health care directives. I mean, it's just keeping it up to date, basically.
I mean, who can object to that? actually, and I think that we... you know, if once that goes through, then getting the information out to people. As you know, I'm the big Pulsed supporter, handing out those pink forms left and right and saying, go see your doctor with this. So,
so is that registry then just in our state, Jean? What about when people, as older people do, move out of state to be close to family or something like that?
Well, as it stands now, each state has their own, but they're looking for a national type of registry. But, you know, we're kind of at the forefront. New York has, it's not even the Pulse, they have the Most. It's a different one because it's multifaceted. In fact, not just physicians can sign it. You know, other people in the healthcare team can. So, you know, we have certain rules here in the state, and this is just one so that it can have an electronic basis, which is, you know, technology as we move forward.
Okay, good idea. Anyone else? Is Susan still on? I can't see her.
Susan apparently was having trouble maintaining a connection.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't think any other committees have probably met since we last met. So do we have any of our standing committees that need to report anything? Well, we're still kind of through the community education, toying with the idea about the vaccine hesitancy thing. Candace, share with us what you're doing at the university with your videos.
So I'm making a series of question-based videos that I'm calling Ask an Immunologist. Sounds corny. I'm open to other ideas. But essentially, like, the first one was Ask an Immunologist, when am I immune after vaccination? Right. And so then I provide some information about that in a short video. The next two videos I'm doing, I'm collaborating with a cartoonist in our department who's amazing and published all over the place. And he's drawn me some cartoon panels about how, like, the mRNA vaccine works, how the adenovirus vaccine works. So we can do short videos on that. I would like to do one that's called something like, I'm young and healthy, why should I get vaccinated, or something like that, because I work with a lot of students and folks that, you know, feel like maybe they don't need the vaccine. So anyway, like this series of things, I'm sending to our school district. So the superintendent is really interested in them. I sent him the little one that I sent you, Mary Jean and Tamar. And he was like, yeah, this would be great because all the teachers are getting vaccinated right now. I go on spring break in a week or so. So I'll have a little more time. They're nothing very snazzy. They're just like me giving a little mini, hopefully accessible lecture. So, that's the approach so far. And then I'm happy to meet with groups of people if they, if there's a like particular group that wants to ask questions in person. And I wanted to be available by email as well in case people have questions. I think every single person that gets a shot is a win. You know, we just need to get them all.
Good. Yeah. So is it okay if I share your first YouTube with everybody? I'll send that off to everybody after the meeting today so that you can see it. I think it's a great job. Lynn, go ahead.
Oh, I can't hear.
I was just going to ask, how is that? Are those going to be available for any of us that might want to show them to a group or something?
Yeah, that was the idea. Because, I mean, I feel like I can't be everywhere anyway. And so it's nice to have just if someone has a specific question, here's some information about that. So I'm happy to share with anyone. I'm on the, I don't know what it's called, vaccine implementation team at Cal Poly. I don't know if Cal Poly is actually going to use these videos because it involves like branding and like approval by, I don't know who. So these are not like, this is me as a PhD in microbiology and immunology sharing some information. It's not like a sanctioned Cal Poly thing, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, I'll share them with everybody. I'll share the one with everybody. I think it's great.
I think you're well-credentialed, Candace. Thank you very much for doing that.
Even if I don't have proper Cal Poly branding.
Okay. All right. Does anybody have anything else this evening? Mike, do we have a program scheduled for next time? I forgot to look before the meeting tonight.
I'm sorry. A program scheduled for
next month?
We don't have an agenda set up for next month yet, but we do have, let me see what I can find. We do have a topic for next month.
Okay. Mary Jean, yes. I did notice that you may have noticed that the date is wrong for the next meeting. It's the 12th. I think you would figure that out by next month.
Oh, April the 12th, yeah.
I was wondering if we are sticking with those topics. Things are changing all the time. I know I was going to help someone with looking at, I think it was pedestrian safety sometime like May or June or something like that. Maybe we should kind of review that schedule as things have changed and priorities may change, and maybe we want to reconsider what future topics might be.
For next month, we have a scheduled topic of cancer care, resource needs, statistics, and tumor board.
And who's in charge?
Cochran and, yeah, I mispronounced it, I'm sorry, second.
Tamar. Okay, well, that's probably a good idea, Tom. Maybe we need to look at the upcoming agenda items as far as the programs and see if we need to relook at some of those. So let's go ahead and keep the meeting on that's scheduled for the 12th. And then, Mike, I'll give you a call and maybe we can talk about the topics and see if we need to readjust some of them. Jean?
Well, you know, when you think about cancer care, I think it would be interesting to see, you know, they say a lot of people are having trouble getting access during the pandemic and are cautious about screening. So it might be something we might want to have someone just kind of give, you know, 15-minute update and what's happening with cancer care and the pandemic, you know.
Okay. Do you have any ideas for a good speaker?
I can investigate, and if I find one, I'll let you know.
Okay.
And Tamar, did you have anybody that you would like to talk to?
I think Tamar jumped off.
Well, I know that the Hearst Cancer Resource Center has had changes. We have a new director. Beverly has retired, so they have a new nurse navigator. So I can ask to see if they can give kind of an overview of what's happening in the community.
Okay. We might check down at Hope Cancer Center down in...
Now, AG?
Yeah, because AG uses that, you know, sometimes.
Right. I have contacts at both, so I'll ask.
Oh, good. All right. Good. Okay. All right, and then we'll look at the, you know, other agenda. And it's only actually a few months until another planning meeting for us. So, all right, does anybody have anything else this evening?
I was, Mary Jane, just to think about, I was thinking this summer or heading up to the summer might be good to consider something in the area of tourism or changes. People seem to be very excited about things opening up, and we are a destination area. And I know there were some really concerns before when things opened up, and it'd be interesting to hear maybe that interface. You know, before there was congregate care was an issue, then schools opening up. I think we're going to be flooded with folks from many areas coming to our area. Spring, probably summertime, and maybe it'd be good just to hear people's thoughts on that or the people that are planning on that.
That might be a good thought for May. That's kind of pre-spring, but kind of pre-summer. So, okay. A good suggestion. We'll see what we can do with that. All right. And also... all of you, Tom has changed his email address, so Mike updated the roster. And will you send a new roster out with that new information, Mike?
Will do.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, I think we will be adjourned, and we'll see you in a month. Thank you all.
And Mary Jean, stay on for 1 second. I just want to collect some more information about your technical issue.
My technical issue?
With the
Is it called
the vaccination?
Okay, I'll stay on.